This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up. But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
All right, guys. We are back. The KMOX Home Improvement Show. And I want to welcome in the 97.1 FM crowd to the mix. Love having you here. And you guys can, you can find me, locate me, ask me anything you need about your home, maintenance wise, DIY job wise. Maybe you're thinking of doing something, want some advice, remodeling, any type of maintenance. You can give me a shout. You can find me just like the KMOX listeners do at 314-436-7900, just like Dan found me. I think we got Dan on the line. Let's find out what's going on. Dan, are you there?
Yes. I have an outdoor shed that we bought from Sam's, and we've had it about 3 years. And underneath of the floor of the shed, the floor is rotting out from water damage, I believe. And what we were going to do is try to remove everything out of the shed, take it off the foundation, and clean it out, haul in some sand and some gravel, level it all out, put pavers for a floor, and try to reattach everything. I was wanting to know what you think about that idea.
So the shed right now has a wooden floor that
it
came with it?
Wooden floor. It has a wooden floor that's starting to rot out, yes.
Yeah. So the only thing that I would say about that is with the pavers, I would just question how you attach the shed walls to the pavers, to the ground, to kind of hold that shed in place. So if you pour a concrete floor, like a 4-inch thick concrete patio, instead of your pavers on top of the sand and gravel, you can put bolts and things into the concrete and it's gonna hold, and it'll hold the walls. And I don't personally know a great way to mount a shed to pavers and to the ground to hold it there if you got a big storm or a lot of wind or something like that. And of course, inside your shed, you don't have to be a really great concrete person to smooth it out, and you know, you're not looking for like a patio or driveway finish. So you could do a little more DIY concrete there. You know what I mean? Because you're inside a shed. If you get a little dip, it's not gonna hurt you much, and so you don't got to be the best finisher in the concrete business to do the shed
floor. What about treated plywood? Would that be a good way to another way to go instead of all that?
I think with any kind, even with treated plywood, I think you're just basically extending your life, but not as long. So, because you're still going to get so much with that being wood, you do like a 2x6 frame floor or something, and you're right over rock, gravel, dirt, anything that close to the ground, you just get so much ground moisture. It's going to rot away. It'll last longer right. than if it wasn't treated, but it just won't last as well as you think. And so, to me, a good concrete square with some anchor bolts around the edges to bolt your wall down to is going to be your best bet to make okay. it last and keep everything there.
Alrighty, sounds good. I wanted to get a professional opinion. I appreciate it very much.
Yep, unless somebody has an idea or a thought on how you mount a shed down to the ground around this paver system, that would be... I just have never tried it and don't know of anything in particular that would work really well as far as how that mounts. Maybe do a concrete kind of footing wall edge that the walls go on and put the pavers in between that might be okay, and that gives you something to lock down onto. But, yeah, it's kind of it's all about how you attach it, and you just don't want your shed to blow over when you get a big windstorm or a lot of winds or something like that. So definitely good thoughts, good ideas, and the concrete would definitely hold that moisture really, really well. And, boy, have we, with the rains we've had, then the heat, then the rains, and the ground kind of hardens up, and then it rains so much that water gets around your foundations. We have had just a ton of calls and conversations in the last pretty much 2 or 3 weeks of so much water, so many things happening around, and how to work it and how to figure it out, and all of that is such a topic, and it's such a big topic here in St. Louis, obviously, because we do get some bad winds. We get a lot of wind-driven rains that hit the side of the house, winds that can blow over a shed, that can take siding and roofing off your house. So having these best practices systems and doing things really, really great means a lot, and really helps a lot. If you're after longevity, it's definitely something to consider in how you do everything, because getting a little more, spending a little more up front, and really getting things well up front, if you're in it for longevity, lasting value, and spending that little more up front is going to mean a lot more later on down the road, and not having to fix things or redo things again. So, hey, we're going to get into our first break here. Remember, everybody, you can find me at 314-436-7900 for all those home improvement fans that want to hear the rest of the show from KMOX. Jump over to 97.1 FM with us during the beginning of the Cardinals, and we'll be here to answer your questions, and we'll be right back. All right, guys, we are back, and I am truly wondering how Drew knew my exact genre of music with the Beastie Boys and the timing, and when I was into all that, and 80s, that was my time, high school, everything, best decade probably ever to exist, at least because I grew up in it. I'm sure everyone says that about their decade, but what great memories. Thanks, Drew. I appreciate that. So, hey, yeah, so we're here. We've got a lot going on. We've got Don on the line. Remember, everybody else, 314-436-7900 brings you right to me, anything you need. And let's jump with Don here and see what's happening. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Sure. I'm not a professional or anything. I'm just think out of the box kind of guy. So yeah. I just hopped in my truck. And I was listening to your caller about mounting a shed
yeah.
to pavers, and you said you didn't have any ideas.
Yeah.
So why couldn't you just drill a hole through the paver? You know, it's concrete bit, of course.
Yeah.
Get a piece of all thread or something like that, drive that into the ground, get a big flat washer and a nut, and bolt it right to the shed.
So I think that would probably be okay if you did like a little concrete pier or something to kind of mount that in, because then you could do like a J-bolt that would kind of not want to pull up real easily.
You would want to take kind of like what I did with my gazebo. I took a piece of paper and I kind of bent it, and as I drove it in, it would, you know, have a wet, you know, something where you couldn't pull up on it. You know, like like a dog stake or
exactly.
You know, fishing pole, a pole holder for, you know, some of those.
So, some kind of dog leg, something to kind of give it that uplift strength, because that's the real problem with the wind, is it's hard to have uplift strength when wind's pressuring on a wall or whatever. But I'm sure there's a way, like what you're talking about, that could happen. It's just kind of manufacturing that and you know, what do you think's going to work, and really I don't know that there's a code for sheds that really calls, like, you have to have so much uplift, or you have to, you know, like a house is much, much different with the codes and everything we need to think about. And you put the shed out in the backyard and there's just not as much of a checking or permits needed or concern on how do you even keep that thing down, you know, that sort of thing. So,
yeah, well, like I said, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, take a piece of all thread and just bend one end like a hook, drive it down, turn it, you know, 90 degrees or whatever. So it's going to be wedged right against that. And then, like I said, just a hole in, you know, and a piece of paper block, like you were talking, and a flat washer and a nut.
Yep.
I think you'd be good to go.
Yeah, I think you could definitely do something like that. That's awesome thought.
Something fairly cheap and easy.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's my opinion for the day.
Hey, no, I appreciate the call. I love the thoughts, and you know, because some people do stuff like this and it works really well, and it's just, you know, I get stuck sometimes in this thought of, you know, everything about the house and the codes and the different things, so then you kind of get stuck on some of the simpler stuff and maybe start to overthink it just a tad bit.
And my job, I actually work at Lowe's. Fine, I'll tell everybody. I work at Lowe's, and I worked in the plumbing department for a long time.
That's awesome.
Especially in some of the older homes, you have to come up, and I'm not a professional plumber. It's just things I've learned, you know, over my lifetime.
Yep.
So
that's me too. Appreciate it, Don.
Okay.
Have a good afternoon. Very welcome. Hey, appreciate the input there. And there's a ton of ways to skin a cat, as they say. And definitely there's some things that can be kind of figured out and engineered and somehow to make work and get in there. I've often had this conversation with my wife about above ground swimming pools and people placing them in the ground where they're kind of ground level. And, you know, there's this whole, and we've heard, we heard Scott Mosby here on KMOX for years and years. And one of the things I used to really, points he would make that I loved and appreciated, was just thinking about how things are done and going, well, the comment is, maybe you can, or if you could, should you? and kind of thinking like, well, if it's possible, is it going to work in every scenario? And is it going to? And so we've talked all different times about, there's a ton of videos out there of in-ground swimming pool or above-ground swimming pools being put into a hole in the ground and kind of making them ground level. And I'm just looking at that going, it's kind of that, even if you could, should you? Because with the – and I'd question, where are these people at also? Because in our area, you when you get rain, you can get groundwater, you can get water moving away, and you can have things maybe that happen – but then all of a sudden, we'll get the rain like we had a couple years ago, and so much of St. Peter's flooded, and there was houses that flooded from a creek in St. Peter's, and they all got all this damage and 2 feet of water inside their houses, and because it rained 6 inches in like 40 minutes or whatever happened in that event, and basically you have an above-ground pool in a hole in the ground, it could work a lot of times right up until then. And it's like, if the ground can't handle all that water, is this thing just going to lift up out of this hole and float away? How are you managing water? When you look at new stadiums, baseball and football outdoor stadiums, and all these outdoor stadiums, they have such a drainage system underneath them to handle so much water in the ground with French drains and sump pit pipes and all these things running to manage and handle all this water that comes inside there, because you do get these rains that are so overwhelming. We do work outside. We put in a French drain with a 4-inch pipe in it, and it works really well, and it takes water away from the house right up until you get that 5-inch rain. And then you're like, well, that pipe would have needed to be 8 or 10 inches to try and handle that much water that fast. And it doesn't happen super often. So how good are you doing things, and what are you preparing for? Well, we do French drains all the time with a 4-inch pipe that's generally not going to manage that much water. And that's okay, because it's a less of an occurrence. And, you know, kind of like we were talking earlier with Eric about his pipes coming in his wall, and how far do you go to try and stop this when you've lived in the house for years and you've had this issue happen one time? Well, maybe you try and find out, how often does this reoccur before I get too deep into this really hard giant fix where I'm digging 6 feet deep and doing all this work to try and stop this from happening. Maybe just doing something on the inside works for now and works for a while. And maybe you just got to redo that every now and then, because you're only getting a rain like this once a year, twice a year, once every 2 years. You just don't know. So you got to kind of learn and educate and figure out, what do I really think I'm up against? How often? And then you can make that quality decision to really figure out how should I handle it, and how long am I going to be here? And all these things come into play when you're trying to make these decisions. And for me, as a consultant for Mosby Building Arts, and going around and visiting people and talking about all this, probably the biggest thing I've learned about all of this is not just from my angle in how we should fix things or what's going to last the longest, but really how it's all really up to the owner and what they're thinking and what do they have in mind, and how long are they going to live? They have all these decisions to make. So really for me, it's more like what I'm trying to do here today is my job is more talk about it, educate, get someone to understand what's happening, and then they can kind of move on and make a decision. Should I really replace this entire door, or should I just caulk it and try and stop the water for now? And since I understand what's happening, then I can make a decision on, do I do something very simple that might not last real long, that a lot of people might call a Band-Aid, but then, or do I go all the way, replace the whole door, take the siding off, flash the whole wall, understand what's happening, get the water going where I want.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Then I know I've fixed the issue 100%. Or do I do something in the middle where just the door's replaced and we get it all sealed up and I know I'm good for now, but if the house was 12 years old, maybe it's another 12 years before I see this issue again. So there's a lot of layers of what we do and how good it's done in our industry. And we just need to kind of contemplate, learn, understand, educate yourself, and then you can really decide what is best for you. We do it with our health every day. We do it with our vehicles. We do it with all of these different things that we do every day. We do it with our careers and our jobs and our positions and everything. So do that with your home too, and then you can really understand and make a great decision for you. So if you have anything going on around your house, we've got two full segments here, another half hour to go. So jump in with me. Any questions, any comments, any concerns, get with me. We'll help you through it. 314-436-7900 is where you find me. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. All right, guys, we are back, having a great time here on the Home Improvement Show. I'm Rich Orris, your host. A lot of great conversations, a lot of great topics so far today. Don't forget, we've got plenty of time for you. Anything you've got going on, feel free to chime in. Give me a call. 314-436-7900 is where you can find me. Or if you're far away, you can do 1-800-925-1120, and that'll get you right to the same place too. So for everybody out there, love to hear from you. Love to help you out. Love the conversations that we have. And, you know, talking about conversations in the last couple weeks, we've had some really great conversations. And I like to bring these up because, well, one, you can go back and you can go to Odyssey and odyssey.com, I guess, and you can find these shows, the podcast from everything that we've talked about here on these shows, all the different dates. So if you hear something and you're like, wow, that's interesting, like I'm kind of curious about that, you could either go back and you can listen to the podcast from two weeks ago, or you can just jump in, call in, and we can talk more about it and we could talk about it again. But we've definitely had some really great stuff. Last week we talked about some marine grade composite decking for deck boards for a boat dock, and we talked about some basement insulation and how to handle frost from building up on the foundation concrete walls. We had a lot of questions, just like today. We've had a lot of questions about water. We've had a lot about decks and doors with water coming in around them. We talk about how to build them right, how to install doors to stop leaks, the different flashings that they should have. We've had a lot of conversations about, you know, when you look at a door, and I just had one, literally a great repeat client of mine yesterday morning. We've done a ton of work for her, and she moved, and she has a door that is leaking, and I'm looking at the house overall, and if you look at the top of your exterior doors, if you've got the brick mold trim going around those doors, and you look at the very top, and if your house was built, or if you had a door installed in the past 10, 20 years, or if your house is, you know, 20 years young or less, 10 years old, there should be a head flashing metal piece at the top of that door. And so this client had that, and her biggest issue is really just with the fact that it's a builder grade door. And most of what she's getting is coming in around the glass and the weather stripping and just coming in around the actual door itself. But I see that head flashing. I see how the flashing is at the top of the stone where it turns into the fiber cement siding. And I was able to kind of lift up a little bit of that counter flashing on top of that stone and see the house wrap is back there. And so I can see some indicators that this house was probably wrapped and flashed in a better manner than most. The door head flashing is one of the first indicators that yes, they've gone at least one step further than most people out there, because you just don't see it a lot, and it really needs to be there to guide water where you want it to go and outside the door from behind the siding. And if you don't believe me that water gets behind siding, just look around, talk to your neighbors, talk to different people. It gets behind vinyl siding. When caulk fails, it gets in. It gets in through stone and brick and porous materials. It gets in from the space and just the condensation. So around a window, the way we wrap and flash a window, we're dealing with condensation that could occur on the windowsill in the framing itself just from the temperature difference. We're using the best type of insulation to try and prevent that stuff from happening. So a low expansion foam around the doors, around the windows to block the air and get a good temperature difference resistance there is very, very important. So there's a lot of things we do in how we do all that. Now, we also had a really good conversation last week about moving a staircase in a home and what that all entails and the different things you get into. We talked about more water, a window well that fills up with groundwater, and how to handle something like that, and what are the different ways you could take that in and get rid of that water and get it running off. And it needs a good thorough examination. It needs a good understanding how steep the ground runs away could really play into how that could be done. If you could move water not manually, just with pipes, just with open air, and or just on the surface of the ground to get it away from where you want, the more you can move water without a mechanical type of system is just a great idea. So if you have a steep enough pitch to the ground where you can run a pipe that water will just pitch the right way and run out, that's the best way to do it. But sometimes we get into this mechanical of a pit and a pump that brings the water back up where we need, and then it can run away because it's higher up when the sump pump pushes it uphill. Sometimes we have to be in those situations. What I would warn people about is I've seen a lot of times where they bring that outside water inside the house, and I've seen it happen where they'll say, okay, well, we'll put a pipe into this window well, and we're going to drill a hole in your foundation, and we're going to put that pipe into your foundation down to your floor, and we're going to let that water run through the pipe down to your sump pump drain line and your perimeter sump pump line, and then it can go to your sump pump and it can go out. Well, when you invite water into the house, there's so many things that can go wrong with a system like that. So handling it from the outside, and I'll give you a couple of examples. One is right here today, one of our second call today with Eric about the pipe coming through his foundation for his geothermal. Now, he needs that pipe to do that, but we had a whole conversation about the water that's coming in around the pipe. So that can happen with that window well system. Trying to bring a pipe in, cutting a hole in a foundation could just invite water where you don't want it. And I had a job that I saw years ago where it was a bunch of water underneath the front porch and trying to manage that. And that's exactly what they did. So they put this pipe out through the foundation wall. They put it down to the sump system into the concrete floor. And then years later, maybe 5, 6, 8 years later, after this foundation company performed that work, I'm looking at the house and they're like, you know, we had this water issue. It was solved by doing this, and now we have this water issue again. Well, that pipe got clogged, and so it all just started coming in around the pipe. It filled up underneath the porch again. It was coming in different areas, and they ended up with all this water in their basement again. And if you would have not put the hole, not put the pipe, and created a fix on the front porch from the outside, that would have never happened inside their basement. So they did all this work, finished their basement, and then 6-8 years later, they got damage to their finished basement, and we're tearing apart part of their basement, and we're getting rid of mold, and we're trying to fix and control this water problem because of this pipe that came in through the house. So even if it works for now, it might be a less expensive fix. And understanding the two, like what I was talking about, having those conversations, we were talking about that earlier, and understanding, well, here's the best fix, and here's probably what it's going to cost, and here's a lesser one, and here's what it's going to cost. But no one tells you about the implications, what might occur. And that's the conversations that we need to be happening. As an industry, we need these happening so that people can understand what's happening, what might happen later. So when you fix a crack in your wall, let's have a conversation about a sump pump and where water goes. Because if you got water coming in your foundation wall 3 feet high, and you can correct that, and you can guarantee you'll never get water in that crack again through this certain system and application, it doesn't mean the water went away from the outside of the house. So where's that water going to go? So have those conversations. What's next? That's what I think we're missing a lot in our industry, and would be a great thing to have. So if you want to have any conversations like that with me, we got one more segment coming up for you. We're going to get into our final break here. You can get to me in the last segment at 314-436-7900. More calls, more questions, whatever you need, stay tuned. It'll be coming up. All right, we are back. Last segment for you. If you got something, you're going to need to get in quick, but I'd love to hear from you. 314-436-7900 is how you'll get to me. And so we were kind of talking about all these different questions and calls we've had over the past week or two. And I did have another one that I wanted to bring back up that we talked about last week, because and it's a very common question that I get. And there's a very common statement that I hear all the time when I get this question. But Jim called in last week, and he was asking about different pricing for different areas. And do companies actually price things differently, whether they're in, depending on what neighborhood they're in? And if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense for different states, for different cities, for different areas. These things make perfect sense because there's different levels of what things cost and how the earnings are. So the same position in California makes a lot more money per year than the same position in St. Louis or maybe Chicago. But the cost of living is much, much greater in California. It's greater in Chicago than St. Louis, but so it's all kind of relevant. So I understand how there could be a difference from LA to Chicago to St. Louis to somewhere in Iowa or something like that. But when you're in an area and you perform work in a certain mile radius, then typically I would say there shouldn't be a difference depending on whether you're in Ladue or Webster Groves or North County or Florissant or Hazelwood or O'Fallon, Missouri. Really, when things are identical, and we kind of cover all the time how every house is different and every project is a little bit different, and the way we look at things here at Mosby is definitely per job, per house. we're not necessarily just doing square footages. And if, you know, and my explanation all the time for that is, if you understand what a floor should cost per square foot, and you say, well, I've got a 10 by 10 room, and so my floor should be this much. But if you're on the first floor or the second floor, there might be a little bit of a difference in that. If you're in a high rise and you're on the 23rd floor, there's going to be a lot different in that. So understanding the things that go hand in hand with those projects is what throws that curve in square foot pricing. But if you were to estimate a bathroom remodel and it was two different houses in two different areas, and each bathroom is within 15 feet of the front door on the first floor, and each bathroom is the exact same size, and each bathroom has the exact same materials in it, then the cost to construct those two bathrooms should be identical no matter where your house is. You know, and when we're looking at projects, and the common statement I hear, and I made it last week when Jim was asking, was everybody says, well, I live in O'Fallon, Missouri, and I don't want the Ledoux price. And it's like, well, so the Ledoux price only changes because of selections. If you're performing the same thing, then it just boils down to, what are you putting into it? There's three things really that kind of drive the cost of the investment in a project. And one is how much work you're doing, size, magnitude. If your bathroom's 10 by 15 and this bathroom's 5 by 8, well, you better bet the 5 by 8 is gonna cost less than the 10 by 15. So, but when you're picking things. So that's another way of like, all right, well, what raises or lowers the investment in a project? Well, what are the selections that you're picking? When you're in a home in an area like Webster Groves, Ledoux, or Kirkwood, and you look at what's normal for the area and what the house kind of deserves to have, or what most of the house have, or what the city might even make you use. So in some of these areas, they will not let us install vinyl windows. So wood-clad windows that have a historic value or look like they're meant to implicate this glass of it's all separate pieces of glass and it's truly divided lights, that's going to cost a lot more than a vinyl window in O'Fallon, Missouri, or somewhere like that, that doesn't have any of that. So that's where some of that cost difference will truly come in and come to play, you know, during that. So just think about that. And when you talk to people, but hey, we got Jim on the line real quick. We've got a couple minutes left for you here. Jim, what do you got going on?
Hi, Rich. Good afternoon. Got some hail damage to my siding and likely my roof, so I'm going to check into having that replaced. And while I'm at it, I may do the windows too, just because they're original. Obviously, the windows will need to go in before the siding. But in terms of order, would you think that the roof would go on before the siding, or the siding the roof? I know the roof guy may say he wants to go last, and the siding guy may say he wants to go last. But is there a natural order when it comes to doing those?
So, yeah, I would say do the roof first.
Okay.
And then the windows and siding are kind of windows before siding, but windows mm-hmm. and siding, truly to do them well, go hand in hand, because you need to take off siding to be able to install a new construction style window that you can flash tape and put into the house wrap, or flash tape to the zip system or whatever you've got on the house. So if you really want a great airtight, watertight window, you need to take some siding off, put the window in. So it is good to find the same company that understands how to do that and will replace the windows and replace the siding. with the same company, because and then they can do that hand in hand. So windows would go before the new siding, but it's kind of after siding has been stripped so that you can flash it very well. Is that helpful?
Right. In other words, you're going to have to peel back the old siding to do the windows.
Yep.
Kind of leave that on and then take it all off at some point to put on the new siding.
Correct. Yep.
Right.
So
okay.
It'll kind of be roof, windows, siding.
Gotcha. And then gutters too, but that would probably just go on right after the roof.
Gutters would go on right after the siding, because if you're doing the soffit fascia wrap and soffit material underneath, you got to put that on before your gutter goes on.
Gotcha. So gutters very last. Okay, perfect.
Yep.
Thank you, sir.
No problem. You're welcome. Great question. We got that squeezed in for you. And remember, you're going to have your gutters off for a little while they do that siding. So get ready to watch for some water and everything. So, hey, had a great, great time with everybody today. Remember, as you're out there, be good to each other. Be good to your homes. And we'll be back for more Home Improvement Show next week.